I'm Anna Horford, and you're listening to the Celtics Life Podcast.
Welcome, everyone, inside the Celtics Life Podcast. I'm Mark Allison here with my man, Justin Quinn. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors are currently facing elimination in their respective conference finals. Boston being poised to take out the Cavs. But before we get on into all this madness, how are we feeling about the Houston Rockets knocking off the Golden State Warriors in Game 5 at home, taking a 3-2 series lead? Justin, what's going on, my man?
I don't know what to make of this postseason. It's been one of the most interesting in terms of the narratives and one of the least interesting in terms of the blowouts. So last night, being the close game that it was and ending, in my opinion, the way that Boston would like it to end if we are lucky enough to progress on to the finals, it's been quite interesting.
Yeah, and what do you make of that? So, obviously, the Golden State-Houston series has been – they haven't all – each team has won a game on the road. But so far, the Celtics, staying true to their form this entire postseason, aside from one win in Philadelphia, that they're taking care of home court. What do you make of the play at home versus the road, the advantage? I mean, how is it just working out this way where it's like these teams seem to have such a big advantage on their home floor?
Well, I mean – home court advantage is always a thing, but not like this. And I'll be honest, I don't have an explanation for it. I've seen some good think pieces that say maybe the amplification of the fouls combined with Boston's style of play is at least partially, you know, to explain that. But that would make more sense, you know, like, let me back up a little bit. Boston's calling card is defense, and the reason why they have been able to perform such high levels despite all these injuries is because their defense is so elite, and that will keep a team close unless somebody just goes off in a way that they haven't figured out how to cover, which has happened to Boston a couple times in the postseason, usually away. But it doesn't make any sense in my mind why home court advantage is converting into such a big boost. Even with the defensive thing, because you would think that normal home court advantage would give a team like Boston just enough to get over the hump so long as their defense stays, you know, top of the league-ish throughout the course of the series. But what's been happening instead is these big blowouts, kind of like what's going on the West Coast, though not after last night. But that's really been like a tale of parallel series, and like now we're sitting in a situation where we are poised to have not only the Cavs under a threat of elimination, but also the Warriors. So the presumptive favorites to come out of both conferences are now looking at being eliminated, which is just nuts to me.
Yeah, and so, I mean, obviously, the Celtics have been shocking people all throughout this playoffs. We talked about this last week on the pod, playing against the Milwaukee in the first round. We thought that they would beat Milwaukee. Not a lot of people around the league did. And obviously, you know, there's a little home bias there. But at the same time, we knew what the team was capable of, at least on the defensive end. And the Philadelphia series is where things started to shock everybody. To beat them 4-1, the people had them. There was a lot of people saying they were going to sweep us. You know, these NBA pundits, like everybody thought that they were just, you know, the superior talent. And then we come into the Cavs series, win the first two games, shock everybody again. Obviously, a little step back when we lost the two games on the road, but they're, you know, 3-2 lead right now. It's remarkable that, you know, they've gotten – we were talking about how everything from this point was gravy. After the first round win, we wanted them to win the first round and everything else was gravy. Well, there's a lot of gravy on the plate right now that it's coming over the sides. And I'm just like – and now we've come to the point where it would be a disappointment to lose to Cleveland, don't you think? I mean, after 2-0 series lead, up 3-2 now – I expect them to have some struggles tonight again. I wouldn't be shocked if they lose this game. I'm actually curious to see how Cleveland responds with their back against the wall. I mean, we know LeBron will show up for the game, whether or not his shooters do, whether or not Ty Lue has another boneheaded meltdown, and we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah.
But I feel comfortable with the Celtics going into a game 7, despite the young guys, despite, like, they play so well at the Garden. I'm confident, and I'm at the point where if they lost now, I would be disappointed. Whereas if you asked me that at the beginning of the series, I would have said, no, I mean, I would like them to win, but obviously, you know, with given the injuries and whatnot, I wouldn't necessarily like expect it.
No, how could you not be disappointed at this point? I mean, you know, with a little bit of distance, no matter what ends up happening, I think we'll be able to talk ourselves into being comfortable with this season quite easily, given even if we had had Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving at the beginning of the season, if you had said to us that we would not only win at least one more game in the conference finals than we did last year, never mind reach them again, but that we would start out with a 2-0 lead, you know, I don't think that you would find yourself in a situation to say that that is a step backwards, particularly now that we have gone on to take a 3-2 series lead and have two shots, not just one, but two shots to eliminate LeBron. And frankly, I would really rather see it happen on his home court, since he has done it to Boston more than once on our home court.
Yeah, and for this would be an ultimate payback for all the grievances he's caused us over the last several years, basically killing off the our last big three era. And we had a 3-2 series lead in 2012 over the Cavs. I'm sorry, the Heat.
same thing. The LeBrons.
For us to be able to take it full circle, I mean, we were the spoiler on him when he was still in Cleveland. We played spoiler a couple years there where he could have made it to the finals. And for to be able to take it full circle, I know we talked about this in depth on the last pod, but just to be able to send him on his way out of Cleveland, hopefully to the West Coast.
Quite poetic.
Would be, right, it would be full circle for sure. Here's an interesting thing that a buddy of mine brought up yesterday. Watching the Golden State Rockets game. Get back to that for a second. These two teams yesterday, obviously Golden State was out without Iguodala yesterday. They're kind of their utility knife. And obviously that is a factor for them. He's like kind of like that utility, almost like the way the Celtics have Marcus Smart, where he's kind of this
filled very good, yeah.
A bunch of different roles, does a lot of different things. And there, you know, despite that, somehow the two defenses yesterday, neither one of those teams scored 100 points, which I would have guessed either one of the teams could have won that game yesterday. But if you would have told me that neither one of those teams was going to score 100 points, considering that neither one of them is very good at on the defensive end, that's pretty incredible, if you ask me.
It's kind of what I would envision if Boston ends up playing either of those teams. I will be, obviously, along with most of our listeners, very, very happy with drawing either of them if we end up passing Cleveland. We can get to that in a second. But for me, I think one of the most interesting things about the matchup is it's going to have to be a drag-down defensive fight for Boston no matter what. And both of those teams have elite defenses, different but similar enough that it's going to be, I think, a low-scoring affair unless there is a blowout on Boston side. I don't realistically see Boston having the offense to create a blowout for either of those teams should we end up matching up with them. But there is the situation going on with Chris Paul that we should probably talk about.
Right. So yeah, Paul's been dealing with some leg issues throughout the playoffs. And then last night he went down. I thought it was his ankle. Buddy of mine pointed out that looked like a hammy injury. That's what the word is out of Houston right now, that it is a problem with hamstring. He played through it last night. The Rockets got the W, but, you know, how does that affect them going forward? I mean, if he's not at 100%, I think they are going to have a very difficult time closing out Golden State, and which is unfortunate because as we and you have talked about, and our other buddies on the pod, Tilfer and Lewis, we would obviously prefer to play the Rockets. And I don't necessarily – the Rockets are a great team too. I think there's a lot less that we would have to focus on to deal with, whereas when you have the Warriors, I mean, you've got three guys that could score 50 points, you know. And, you know, with the Rockets, you can really focus on Harden and just try your best to take Chris Paul out of the game. So, obviously –
slightly easier matchup, yeah.
Yeah, I mean – And I, you know, in an ideal world, I would prefer to play them. So What do you feel about this Chris Paul thing?
Well, he has played through the hamstring kind of injury in I think it was 2015 in a series of who were they playing in 2015? Do you remember?
Who?
When Chris Paul was on the Clippers in 2015, he ended up injuring a hamstring, and he played at least one or two games to close out a series. I can't remember if they won or lost, but he's definitely been able to play through at least a grade one hamstring injury before. And we've seen Jalen do it. You know, he was clearly not as effective. I can't really remember. Like, I'm aware that he has done it before, so I'm pretty sure he's going to try to play. But, you know, he's a ball handler, and he's a very mobile guard, too. So he's not like a spot-up, you know, shooter who just runs to a corner or anything like that. But that's what he might have to be at this point, because he's not going to be able to, like, you know, attack the rim. Well, maybe he can. Who knows? But, I mean, I would think with a hamstring injury like that, with what it does to your lift and your speed and your ability to change direction, it's going to impact them significantly. So, you know, my initial exuberance about potentially facing off with Houston, when I heard that news, I was just like, or not.
Yeah. Well, and here's what they'll probably do. James Harden's probably going to have to dominate the ball. I mean, which is not something that he's unaccustomed to. Before Chris Paul was here, right? I mean, that's what he did anyway. So maybe they shift the offense a little bit. Chris Paul does. Maybe he's out there still. I mean, he can, if he can still play, he can still shoot. You know, so he if he does move to that role of being more of a spot up shooter, and Harden goes back to old school James Harden from last year, and just completely. You know, I mean, there. It's not out of the question for Harden to drop 50 points in one of these games. More likely, probably Game 7 if in Houston, if it goes that far. I could see that totally as a possibility, for sure.
I would use him in a situation very similar to how when Jalen first returned from his hamstring injury, have him come in on the second unit, you know, spell Harden for 8 or 12 minutes, whatever, you know, if you don't need him at all, just don't even use him. And beyond that one spell, maybe put him in the last 2 or 3 minutes if the game's close to try to close out, maybe. You know, I think that's probably, for at least Game 6 in that series, I think that's probably their best use for him, to go careful with him, to hopefully give him a little more time to heal for Game 7 if it's necessary.
So back to Game 4, 2-2 after Cleveland tied up the series after the two games in Cleveland. Celtics come back home. They basically controlled the game from start to finish. It was there was a couple of runs maybe that Cleveland made where they could have cut it somewhat in range, but they never were really in the game.
No, they were, you know, it was that awful first quarter, really. I mean, if you fall into a 19-point hole, if you can even come close to crawling out of it, you know, I know the Celtics have done this all season long, but the stakes are a lot higher, and this team has had a lot more looks at how Boston does climb out of these deep holes. So really, that's just not a thing that can happen in the playoffs, particularly this far into the playoffs. And even though they did win the next three quarters, more or less, you know, either very, very close or an outright win, that was what really sunk the game, though you really could say that after that awful first quarter that, at least for now, the series seems to have swung back in the direction of the Celtics.
Right, and going into the game, so we had Coach Brad was saying he was going to make some lineup adjustments, and didn't announce the starters until just before tip-off, and yet didn't change the starters, right? And so, you know, kind of throws a, you know, everyone is anticipating some kind of roster, you know, lineup change, starting lineup change. Brad's been known for this, not just this offseason, but going, you know, back to even last year and before that. He's always willing to throw different guys in the mix. So after getting absolutely smoked in Game 3, the Celtics went back, you know, Game 4 in Cleveland again. Another losing effort, although not quite. They had some chances to get back into that game. They ended up losing by 9. 111-102, but it definitely was much more of a game than Game 3, right?
Oh, totally. I mean, you just can't fall into 19-point holes to start the game out and expect to come out of it with a win, no matter how long you've been doing it all regular season, because this Cleveland team has had a good look at how it's done. you know, how Boston does pull out these deep holes and end up, you know, contending for a victory. And it wasn't enough, but I will say one thing that is positive is after that awful first quarter, basically Boston has won just about every quarter they played mm-hmm. since.
Yes, you're definitely right. So we went into that game thinking Brad was going to make some adjustments to the lineup because he said he was going to. Didn't change the starting lineup, but didn't announce it until the last second. I don't know if that was to throw Ty Lue for a loop. Lou also, and I'm not sure how much he did this in game three, but we noticed a lot in game four. He was playing matchups. He was putting in players. Tristan Thompson was coming in every time Al Horford came in. He was basically doing the same thing with Kyle Korver and Semi Ojeleye. Korver actually played really well against Jaylen Brown in those two games over in Cleveland. So it's a little funny, and we're going to get into the Semi Ojeleye stuff in a second. But you know, what did you think about the way that Lou, you know, playing the matchups like that and like shading player for player? It's almost like a hockey game.
I was actually really impressed with what he was doing. I started to change my opinion of him as a coach, and then he completely took a dump on that in the next game. But we can jump into that whenever you are interested. But yeah, you know, like he has been kind of a head scratcher, and he shows some pretty interesting signs, and this was one of them. I mean, seeing Jaylen Brown get blocked not once but twice by Kyle Korver, who is, you know, not a horrible shot blocker. You know, I wouldn't quite say he's got the same kind of a role as Jaylen Brown does, respectively, for the Celtics in that regard. But he's no slouch in that situation. You know, Terry Rozier was basically, he was just terrible. You know, he was getting switched onto LeBron, and LeBron was just eating him for lunch.
He was very unscary, Terry, in those two games in Cleveland. And you're right. The Cavs did a great job. They kept switching LeBron onto him. Backing him. I mean, Terry has no chance with LeBron posting him up from 20 feet away. I mean, he can just back him all the way to the basket. It's like, you know. And go back to Korver for a second. Now, Korver may be a better defender than people give him credit for, but I swear those are the first two blocks I've ever seen him make. And I've watched a lot of Kyle Korver games, but those, he totally owned Jaylen on those
both. It was weird, right?
It struck me seeing it happen. Didn't expect it. And he's definitely a better defender than he gets credit for, but I mean, we're not talking about Bruce Bowen here. I mean, he's certainly not this kind of stuff you'd expect.
Not at all.
So Cavs end up winning. It seemed like every time in that game that the Celtics had a chance to get back into it, something would happen. The Cavs would answer. We also had the huge swing with the Marcus Morris offensive foul on his leg drifting forward. And Kevin Love got hung up, went flying. What should have been a four-point play turned into an offensive foul on the Celtics. So that was a huge momentum killer. Now, they ended up getting a stop on the other end, and then we did score, I think, coming back up the floor. But at the same time, it was a huge momentum buzzkill. And I thought that was the point where, like, had that gone, even forget about the fourth point, forget about the foul. If that three goes down, they would have sucked the energy out of that building. Instead, the Cavs got all fired up from that. That was really basically the beginning of the end for the Celtics and squashing what should have been a huge momentum move.
I was so pissed about that, and not just because of the momentum aspect of it, but, and I wrote on this earlier in the week, there are two new rules, and both of them came into play in this particular situation, and one of which is called the Zaza rule, or Zaza rule, however you pronounce his name, and that is basically designed to keep people from putting their foot down in front of you. But then the other one is the Draymond Green rule, I guess you can call it. I don't think it's really picked up a colloquial name quite the same way, but it's basically to prevent players from getting nutmegged. And that was the one that the refs decided to use to call a foul in this situation. The impetus of the rule was explicitly to address players getting kicked in the nads. That is what the rule was for. I mean, there was no other reason that rule became the way that they start enforcing that call. And it's an important rule. No one likes getting kicked in the balls. But the other rule is kind of more important, in my opinion, because, you know, you can get pretty hurt from being kicked in the balls, but it won't affect your basketball career long term. It just isn't going to. However, coming down on someone's foot or coming, you know, getting knocked off your center of balance in the air, which is the entire point of having this, you know, airspace rule where you're not supposed to be underneath where a player is expected to land after making a shot. If you look at a slowed down version of it, like, yes, it's true. Kevin Love was definitely moving through the air in a way that he would have missed him if he had not extended his leg. But he extended his leg about 6 inches in a perfectly normal shooting motion, and his leg went underneath where he should have expected his leg to go. So, yeah, it was just a really, really awful call and a potentially dangerous one, in my opinion. It's really good that nobody got hurt out of that. I know it wasn't intentional at all on Kevin Love's part, but it was pretty much a reckless closeout, and that is, in my opinion, the intention of that rule in the first place.
So after game four, the Celtics came back to Boston, came back home, had a convincing win that they ran basically coast to coast against Cleveland, ended up winning 96-83, shot a measly 36.5% from the floor, but the defense was off the chain, held Cleveland to 83 points. Thoughts on game five, Justin? What caused the turnaround?
I think that LeBron is freaking exhausted. You know, like we saw in game four that they in game three particularly, they were just like world beaters. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that they're an older team and they've gotten a lot of rest with that weird, you know, multiple day gap that is now gone.
The mini vacation, yeah.
Yeah. That's the best answer I got, really.
So, and we saw some, obviously we were talking before that the, for whatever reason, the Celtics have just been playing so much better at home this postseason. But, we saw Ty Lue make those adjustments we were talking about in game four. Some of the stuff that he was doing playing matchups. Well, it seemed like Coach Brad, you know, caught on to that pretty quickly and, decided. And this is maybe the funniest thing that's come out of this series so far. But so apparently, post game, Ty Lue was asked why Kyle Korver only played 9 minutes in Game Five after, you know, he was had solid performances in the other games back in Cleveland. He's been playing well, one of the better Cavs this series, and his response was that he was playing Kyle Korver matched up with Semi Ojeleye. And since Semi Ojeleye didn't play in the game, he didn't put Kyle Korver in. Justin, what the hell is he even talking about?
Well, okay, on its surface, that makes absolutely no sense. There have been some responses to that that have tried to justify it. And yeah, you know, there is some truth to the fact that when you find good matchup combinations, you want to stick to them. And when you realize people can exploit others, you want to make sure that doesn't happen. But, I mean, was J.R. Smith, you know, destroyer of worlds? I don't think he was doing so great in that game. And it wouldn't have been very hard to just, you know, try Kyle Korver in the third quarter. That said, I have a theory.
Okay, let's hear it.
So I thought about this long and hard. I did a little bit of research, and I think Ty Lue might just be a sleeper agent.
Oh, let's get your tin hats out, guys.
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, you know, we are the premier podcast for Celtics news out there, and I'm sure Ty Lue listens. And, you know, me being a resident of Mexico is the first thing that connected anything in my head, because he was born in Mexico. Did you know that?
I did not know that. No, that's news to me.
Well, it's not really the same thing, because it's Mexico, Missouri. Not quite the same thing. So once I realized it wasn't Mexico, Mexico, then I had to like try to, you know, see if there's anything else to my theory. And it turns out that there are some other connections, some very suspicious connections, I might add, that really support this theory. First of all, he was an assistant coach for the Boston Celtics the last time LeBron James dispatched them in 2012. Mm-hmm. So perhaps he's weaseled his way into the organization just to get revenge. Now,
ooh, I like this sleeper agent.
Mm-hmm. But it gets there's a lot more. You know, on its surface, I know what you're saying. Lots of people change teams all the time, including players as well as, you know, staff. So that in and of itself is not a particularly damning indictment. However, did you know who Ty Lue's cousin is?
Why don't you tell us, Justin?
Jason Tatum.
Really?
Yes, really. Once removed, but first cousin once removed. Yes, Jason. Wow. Jason Tatum's dad, Justin, is Ty Lue's first cousin.
Okay.
So, you know, there is that saying, blood is thicker than water, and, well, his cousin's bleeding green. I don't know. Could just be a bunch of smoke and mirrors, but I'm suspicious.
You got to figure, right? Cavs are going to be a whole new look next year with LeBron pretty much gone. This Ty Lue, maybe he's already got his other job. He's going to go back up Doc Rivers after he signed his extension over there.
I mean, he's a former Celtic, you know? I mean, work for the organization. That's all you got to do, you know?
Yeah. So. Hey, that is a fine theory and something to keep an eye on. If we notice that J.R. Smith plays 35 minutes again and less than 10, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Playing matchups with the best shooter on your team and a rookie second-round draft pick, that's just pretty – one of the funniest things that's come out of this series. And
thank you very much, Ty, even if you didn't mean it.
Now, we were talking earlier about Houston. Little breaking news here. Just came across my hub here. Chris Paul will not play in game 6. He is out with a hamstring injury. That certainly may change. That's a little.
It was spot. Nice while it lasted.
Yeah, so that's looks like they're going to game 7. Maybe they're just charging him up, and hopefully he's going to play game 7. Maybe it's just safety's sake, and they probably feel better about their chances in a game 7 than playing tomorrow night. That would give him 3 days off. That would today, tomorrow, four. That would give him 4 days between the next game.
That's probably enough to get into game shape. If it's just a grade 1, he might be able to play. And, you know, if he re-injures it and they lose, he's got all summer, so what's to lose?
You know, right, yeah. And I think it's probably best, you know, their best chance of closing out the series would be in Houston, right? So maybe you let Chris Paul heal up and hopefully you have him for game 7, you know, rather than throw him out there for game 6. He re-aggravates it, and then you don't have him at all for game 7, right? I mean, that's probably the thinking behind this, if you were asking me. So,
I think so.
Something to watch, though. I mean, obviously, the Celtics are going to hopefully they've got a good shot here to make the NBA Finals, and obviously, the winner of that series will obviously be paramount if that's the case. But the series aside right now, some NBA news right now. Al Horford named second team all defense. Oh, so Jason Tatum missed first team all rookie, unanimous by one vote. Somebody voted for Josh Jackson, which given the end of season numbers, kind of crazy. But Josh Jackson did have a huge closeout to the season. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was averaging 20 for Phoenix over the last couple months, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I initially thought that was really weird, and, you know, I stopped paying attention once I thought he was kind of meh, even on that you know, amazing Phoenix team, just because of the draft shenanigans he pulled with holding his medicals so he wouldn't end up coming to Boston, and I would like to shake the man's hand for that. Not that he is, you know, proven to be bad. He definitely deserves to be, you know, in the conversation, but I'm pretty convinced that whoever gave him that vote was a local Phoenix writer. I don't know who else would have done it, even after seeing what he's done later in the season, which, as I said, I stopped paying attention to. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he deserves it, but I don't see how you look at him and say, yeah, Jason Tatum's a better guy here.
Yeah, no kidding.
Worst guy, excuse me.
Well, speaking of Tatum, we got this whole Kobe film study thing. Now, Tatum saying he watched it, what, 20-something times, the Kobe breakdown of his play. I know there's people.
Nice honor.
Well, he had a little slippage in the when the series went to Cleveland. I mean, he's played well, but he started playing a lot more ISO ball. People seeing a lot of Kobe-esque traits from him there. Wondering if that was a good thing for him to be, you know, listening to Kobe Bryant's critiques rather than Coach Brad's.
I think that there's something to that. You know, I think it might have gotten to his head a little bit. Then, frankly, the only real thing that I have an issue with in the videos is just the, you know, the moves designed to function as long twos. They're still good, mm-hmm. but I mean, can we not maybe find ways to draw the offense out another couple of feet?
Yeah, I think we're done with the long twos, right? No more of that stuff, right? It's threes and layups, maybe. That's what we're looking for. In other news, too, Celtics legend Bill Russell was rushed to the hospital last weekend. Apparently, he's fine now. Obviously, our thoughts are with Bill. Big recovery. Obviously, we don't want to see anything happen to him.
You saw how he was joking after Game 3. I think he's going to be okay. His he had a comment that I thought was particularly funny where he said his wife pointed out that we shouldn't be worried about his heart because he doesn't have one.
No. Bill Russell. Relentless. Ask Will Chamberlain about that. He knows. New segment here is the grass greener. We've got a special Cavs edition here because we've got some players on the Cavs that were former Celtics. The one who's played the most in this series, Jeff Green, and most recent, well, no, not most recent, I read the Celtics actually, technically, take that back. But Jeff Green had a breakout here in Boston a few years back under Coach Brad.
Speaking of players with heart.
Yeah, right. Speaking of no heart.
I was trying to be nice, come on.
Jeff Green, talented guy, right? And he's signed this year with a veteran minimum contract with Cleveland. Back with the Celtics, when he was last with us, he was averaging 17.5 points a game, 4 rebounds. He shot 30% from 3, 48%. He was playing 30-plus minutes a game. Now, with the Cavs, he's playing. He plays 23 minutes a game, just under 11 points per game. He's been an effective member of the team. What are your thoughts on Jeff Green?
Even though he was putting up a lot of points when he was in Boston, they were mostly empty points, and particularly in his last season with Boston, he was it was really probably the worst, maybe not the worst, but the second worst season under Brad's tenure, and 17 points on a team that is, you know, and I think they made the playoffs that year, but I mean, it was a development year, really, mm-hmm. you know, and the fact that he is still scoring significantly and having some pretty good nights on occasion and actually shooting better from three, and, you know, in general, mm-hmm. I kind of feel like Jeff Green is more important to this, you know, quasi-contending Cleveland team than he ever was in Boston. So, you know, I think the grass is greener for him in Cleveland. I don't know if there's much of a future for him there, but
I think he's actually found a role this year. I think when he left the Celtics, people thought that he could be, one of the top players on a team and, you know, scoring wise anyways. And I think now he's kind of settled into being a force off the bench. He's, you know, he provides them with, he can shoot a little bit from the outside. He can do a lot of different things. He's got some length, which is in today's NBA, you know, obviously a plus, huge plus. So I would agree with you there. Now, for the next guy, the guy that Jeff Green got traded to the Celtics for in exchange.
Why are you there? Yeah.
Kendrick Perkins, he signed with the Cavs this year, basically as a locker room presence because he's only gotten on the floor one time, if I'm not mistaken. I think he would probably have understood his role coming in. I mean, do you think that Perkins thought he was going to be playing more?
I think Perkins hoped he was going to be playing more, but I think he knew that he very likely wasn't. And at this point in time, I would even consider ruling him out because their bigs have not been super effective. And, you know, give him some meaningful minutes somewhere in this series just one more time and see if he can do anything. You never know.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do it. If they waited this long, I think that ship has sailed. And not to mention that his matchup, I mean, who – I'm not sure that he would be a good matchup against – I mean, obviously him and Aaron Baines would be fun to watch going up against each other because Baines is essentially plays the Kendrick Perkins role now for the Celtics.
Absolutely. I think he could do it for a couple of minutes, but
– Yeah. No, it would be fun to see them go at it, but I think Al Horford just too quick for Perkins. He wouldn't be able to contain him on the block.
I just miss Perk, man. I want to see him on the court one more time.
Yeah, me too. I hear you. Maybe we'll get him in some garbage time. That would be awesome if they could check him in one more time when we're knocking them off the floor in Game 7.
Preferably in Boston, exactly. Yeah, because I mean, it wouldn't really be the same if he was.
When we're up 20, have Perkins check in. Come on, Ty was here with Perkins, so I mean, you know, have a little loyalty here, buddy. Now the other guy didn't actually get in Celtics green.
We didn't say if the grass was greener.
Oh, for Perkins, it's not greener. No.
Yeah, no, it's very clear it's not.
He's about to lose this series to the Celtics.
Without even
playing on the team that he's playing. So there's no chance that that's greener. The only way that the grass would be greener is if somehow the Cavs won the championship, which I think is about negative.
It ain't happening.
That will not happen. Anyways, the other guy, Ante Zizic. I was a huge Zizic guy last year. I thought he was, you know, he was a raw talent for the Celtics. He was just when he finally came over, he got some run in the G League. He played summer league. He looked like, you know, certainly a work in progress, but there was a lot of potential there based on his size and the things that he could do. You know, we love our big guys here in Boston. They always seem to get a lot of love. Unfortunately, we never did get to see him with the Celtics. I say unfortunately, but not really, because we traded him for as part of a deal for Kyrie Irving. So that does not really, unfortunately.
I'm okay with it, yeah.
Yeah, so he's played a little bit for the Cavs this year, right?
A couple of games in garbage time, yep.
Yeah, and he played very well for them in the G League. He was averaging 16-9, almost 60% from the floor. I mean, kind of a slam dunk, no-brainer. Grass is definitely greener for him now that he's playing.
Yeah, and I think he's going to have a future with them, particularly if LeBron leaves, which he's almost certainly going to. Not that, you know, he's going to be playing in LeBron's position or anything like that, but I think there's just going to be a lot more minutes on the, you know, combo wing to forwards areas in general. So that's going to give him more space to play, particularly considering how bad they're going to be. I think they're going to be a little bit more okay with him being on the floor. He's just got no space to develop on a team that has the aspirations this Cleveland team has. So I think once this season ends for him, his future with Cleveland is probably pretty bright. And I don't really know that he would have gotten any more, you know, chance to play for Boston anytime soon. And realistically, for the future too, because Boston, unlike Cleveland, they think is going to stay in that contending position for a considerable amount of time.
Yeah, the opportunity will be there for him to play next year, given that the Cavs will probably be rebuilding. So definitely green pastures ahead for Ante Zizic. And if he can play, we'll find out sooner rather than later. Thoughts heading into Game 6 tonight, 8:30. Final thoughts, Justin. What do you think?
I think we're going to know in 5 minutes of game time whether we're going to be playing in Boston.
I think you are at spot. I think at the end of the first quarter, we're going to have a real good idea of where this
what
going to end in. I still feel confident about the Celtics in 7 games. I think that's where we're headed. But I would love for us to walk out of there tonight with a victory. But my money says game 7.
I think it's probably right. I'm hoping for game 6, but I think you're probably right.
And you know what? It's more basketball we get to watch. So one more Celtics game we get to see. As always, check out the link at the top of CelticsLife.com. We've got a huge variety of shirts and hoodies in our store. You can even get tickets to the next game under that heading. Find the blog on the pod on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and most podcatcher apps. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, be sure to rate us 5 stars. If you don't like something or have a suggestion, hit us up on the comment of any Celtics Life article or on Twitter with that hashtag CLPod. Guys, game 5, over. Game 6, Celtics tonight.
We got this. Take care, y'all.